Okay, well, welcome back to our study of the biblical teaching on unforgiveness. And we are going to look at various scriptures, as I mentioned before. And Matthew 18, verses 21 through 35 is our first text, and possibly the most powerful one, in regard to this subject, this topic of unforgiveness. And what we've seen so far is that Peter asked Jesus, "Lord, where's the line in forgiving? Where can I take control? Where can I be the arbiter? Where can I be the gatekeeper of how people treat me?" And Jesus' answer, when he says 70 times 7, is the same as saying, "Peter, never. Peter, there is no line." Peter's asking, "Where's the line, Lord? Where's the limit?" Peter says, God says, Jesus says, "No, there's no limit. There's no line. And you never get to take charge. You never get to be the master of the episode of injury." And then Jesus launches into what has to be described as a very powerful, dramatic picture of the gospel. A master or a king who was owed an inconceivable debt. That's the same as ours, you know. We owed God a debt. Scripture tells us that we came into the world as cursed children, children of wrath. And then later, the New Testament will tell us that Jesus paid the debt. He paid the debt that was owed. And he propitiated God's wrath. Propitiated means he fulfilled it. He paid the penalty of God's wrath. So we have this master to whom a servant owes a inconceivably large, immense, unpayable debt. And we have the servant bowing down low and saying, "Lord, I recognize that I have this debt, and I'll try to repay you." Now, that's a little bit strange, because there's no way he could have paid. But that is also part of the lesson. The lesson is that this is an unpayable debt. There are a lot of contrasts in this chapter, and I'm going to mention them, if I don't forget, later on. But one of the biggest contrasts is the fact, it begins with the fact that this is a debt that would not conceivably be repayable. So the servant pleads, and the master relents. And we saw last time that there's three parts to his relenting. And this is in verse 27, that the master felt compassion, and he released the servant, and he forgave him his debt. Now I want to look at these three words one at a time, because they each have very, very significant things behind them. So the first one, released. The Greek word there used in this text is, I don't know, I'm not sure how to pronounce Greek. I'm not a Greek scholar, but it's apoluo, apaluo possibly. And it's made actually of two, it's a conjunction of two smaller words, apao, which is away, and luo, which is break. So literally in the Greek, to release, as in verse 27, to release is to break away. Think of it as like when you see a movie where someone's tied up with rope and the rescuer, the hero, comes and cuts the rope. That's the idea. That's the idea. It's cutting away. It's tearing away of something. So when it says here that he released him, the master released the servant. The master cut the tie or broke the chain or broke the shackle that tied the servant to the master, or maybe more specifically, tied the servant to the debt. So there's the word released. And then in the same verse, it says here that he forgave him the debt. And that word forgive or forgave is an interesting word. First of all, in English, it's even interesting in English. Probably very few people realize this, but that word, if you go back to the old English, you know, back when, you know, all of these, you know, Norse Saxons and Normans and all these people, you know, were forming what would later become, you know, English, the word was spelled differently, and it was actually two words. Forgave was actually two words at one in the beginning. The first was F-O-R, for, and back then that word meant complete. The second word was, I don't know how to pronounce this, G-E-I-F-A-N, maybe it's Gifan, but that word was gift. So when we say, when we would say, you know, back in those long ago centuries, when we would say that we forgave someone, we would say we completely gifted them. We gave them completely a gift. We completely gifted them. And the way it was used in the old days, way back then, it was commonly used when a man would give his daughter away to another man in marriage. He would say that I forgive, or I am forgiving the daughter. I'm giving her to you. And that's what, you know, let's look at it another way. Let's say that he's saying she was originally under my roof in my house, and now she's under your roof and in your house. Or here's another word picture for you. Let's say you have a treasure chest, and in that you are keeping the memory of the way people have hurt you, and you take this treasure chest and you hand it to the person who injured you. Do you see? It's no longer under your control. It's no longer in your possession. It's no longer in your oversight. It is now in the possession and the control and the oversight of the person you gave it to. That's the idea. That's the idea here. But what about the Greek word there in the text? Same word. Forgive or forgave in verse 27. Well, the Greek is interesting also. And it is aphemiai. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that. But anyway, we have that. It's a conjunction again. And we have the first part of that should sound familiar. And that's apo, apo. And we knew previously that was the word away. And then the second word is h-i-e-m-i. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. And that word in Greek would translate to sent. So what this word means is he has sent away. The word released, as we saw last time, a minute ago, meant that the master cut away, and in this word, forgave, he has sent away. So cut away and sent away. And then if you add the old traditional English meaning of forgive, we have given away. So cut away, sent away, and given away. Do you get the idea? The idea is you relinquish. When you forgive someone, you're relinquishing. You are handing over the episode. You're handing over any possession, any ownership, any control over that episode. It is now in the hands of the one to whom you give it. Does that make sense? So, and then 28. So let's get back to the text. Verse 28. And we didn't read the whole thing earlier, but we see 28. That slave went out. And it begins with but. This is important. But. It means that Jesus is getting to his point here. The parable is turning a corner. And we see another word a little bit later over in verse 30 where it says, however, same idea. Jesus is building a contrast. He's showing us the difference between one thing and another thing. So verse 28, but that slave went out and found one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii. Now 100 denarii Some people think that today's equivalent would be in the hundreds. Some people say 100, 200, 300. But here's the thing. How does this amount compare with what the first slave owed? This is the second slave that owes this amount. How does it compare with what the first slave owed the master? It's not comparable at all. It's off the charts. In other words, there's a contrast of 10 million and a couple hundred here. Do you see that? And that is a huge contrast. And that's the point of this parable. That's intentional, that is, in this parable. Jesus is making a point, and that is that the debt we owe God is not even measurable alongside the worst debt and the biggest debt that anyone could ever owe us. You get that? So 10 denarii, and he seized him and began to choke him, saying, "Pay back what you owe." Now, this seizing and choking, was that evident in the first interplay, the first interaction between the master and the servant? No. Did the master beat on him or choke him or hit him or anything, torture him, anything like that? No. So what do we have here? We have here the servant going to the second servant, and in his mind is murder. And in fact, I say in his mind because when we see in the beginning of verse 28, "But that slave went out." Now, we don't know what kind of time transpired here. Could have been 30 minutes, could have been 30 days, could have been 30 years. But I rather think it was short rather than long. And the thing is here, we don't know how long, but we know one thing. It was in his mind. And you've got to get this about this passage. Because later on, the master is going to call the servant, the first servant, wicked. Now, why does he call him wicked? He calls him wicked because in his mind, while he was being forgiven, he was thinking about somebody else owing him. That can't be, church. That can't be. So begin to choke him, and the fellow slave fell down, begin to entreat him, verse 29, "Have patience with me, and I'll repay you." Those are the exact same words the first servant used to the master. That, again, is a very interesting occurrence. Jesus did this on purpose. He did this on purpose. Because the first servant, when he heard those words, he should have been struck with his own words. He should have been. But apparently he wasn't. It should have taken him back to his own forgiveness. And it didn't. Because verse 30 says, he was unwilling. He was unwilling, but he went and threw him in prison until he should pay back what was owed. Now, that's verse 30. Now, a lot of people say, well, how can you pay somebody back when you're in prison? Well, how is that true in the first instance, and how is it true in the second instance? You're right. It's not. You can't pay while you're in prison. But what the idea is, you know, you've heard of debtor's prison. I don't think it's too common in the West today. But at one point, it probably was over much of the ancient world. And what was expected was that your relatives would then be on the hook. And they would work to pay whatever debt was owed until you could get out of prison. But notice Jesus says that the man's wife earlier on, did you notice that? The first servant, verse 25, along with his wife and children. So his immediate relatives couldn't help him. And I think that's on purpose. I think Jesus points this out on purpose. The utter inability, the utter tragedy, the utter hopelessness of paying the debt, the first servant to the master. So he threw him in prison. And verse 31, the fellow slaves heard about it, and they were deeply grieved, came and reported all of this to the Lord that had happened. And then the master, verse 32, summoned the first servant. And he says to him, "You wicked slave." Now, was he wicked because he choked him? Well, okay. But I don't think that's what Jesus is getting at. We know because he says what he's getting at. He says, "You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you entreated me. Should you not? That's the point of the wickedness. In your heart, Jesus is saying, when I was forgiving you, you already were not forgiving somebody else. Should you not also have had mercy on your fellow slave, even as I had mercy on you? You know, there's a point here. There's a very, very important point here. And that is, did the first servant value his forgiveness? You know, there's a little bit of a preamble to this parable over in Luke chapter 7. And in Luke chapter 7, you may be familiar with the story of the woman who came into a meeting Jesus was having with a Pharisee, and she began to wash Jesus' feet with her hair. And the Pharisee said, hey, you know, you don't know what kind of woman this is. You shouldn't let her be touching you. And Jesus turned to him, and I think he called him Simon. I can't remember for sure, but he says, you know, he says, who do you think? He says, there were two people. One owed a lot and one owed a little. Which do you think will forgive the more? The one who's owed a lot, who owed a lot, or one who owed a little? And the Pharisee said, well, the one who owed a lot. And Jesus said, you are right. You see what he's saying? This woman was crying on his feet and wiping them and washing them with her hair because she knew the value of her forgiveness. And that's the point of this master in Matthew 18 calling that first servant wicked. He says, you're wicked. Shouldn't you have had in your mind the same kind of forgiveness that you got? Which only means one thing. He didn't value his forgiveness. And going back to Luke 7 again, at the very end of that story in Luke 7, verse 47 of Luke 7, Jesus says, those who are forgiven much, love much. Those who are forgiven little, love little. Now that's another gem for you. That's one to write down. Those who are forgiven much, love much. And those who are forgiven little, love little. Verse 34, and his Lord, moved with anger, handed him over to the torturers until he should repay all that was owed him. So shall my heavenly Father also do to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart. The ending here is tough. It's harsh. And don't forget, he's talking to Christians. He's telling this to Peter. This parable is directed to Peter and, of course, the other disciples. Is Jesus saying that if you become a Christian and at some point you find yourself unable to forgive, poof, you're all of a sudden not a Christian? That can't be. That is not what the New Testament teaches. That is not what the Bible teaches. So there are two interpretations, and there's nothing really wrong with giving a lot of value, give a lot of weight, a lot of credence to both positions, both interpretations. One, of course, is this idea of salvation. The fact that this first servant, let's just say it bluntly, and if you don't think I'm blunt enough, or if you think I'm too blunt, look at verse 35 and read it again, that this servant wasn't saved. This first servant, though he pleaded for forgiveness, and though he was given forgiveness, the debt was forgiven, he went forth from that meeting not redeemed, not saved. And there's lots of clues to this in the text. And that happens to be where I fall down, where I fall on the issue. And a lot of other people do in the church as well. John Piper, the late Dr. Sproul, Matthew Henry, even Spurgeon. A lot of people have taken this position. But it isn't the only interpretation. Another interpretation is, especially when you see the word torturer in verse 34, I think other versions have jailers or something like that. The other interpretation is that, and this is John MacArthur's view, that this is just discipline. That what Jesus is saying is, if you don't forgive as you should and as you have been, then you'll get discipline from God. You'll get discipline from the Father until you do. He'll make your life difficult and hard, and you'll be chastised by him. I accept both of those renderings. I don't have any problem with either one of them. And I'll tell you why, and that is because both of them come to the same conclusion. Both of them mean the same thing. And here's your fourth gem of this study, and that is this. What level can you diss your own forgiveness? What level can you disrespect, unvalue your own forgiveness, and still be saved? How can it be? At what level? Now, I say level because if you take the two possible interpretations in hand and think of them both together, and wherever you fall on, you know, whatever side of that you fall, the end result's the same. The end result is this is a warning. The end result is this is a threat. The end warning is this is a wake-up call that if you find unforgiveness in your heart, you need to question your own forgiveness. You need to question your own, the validity of your own salvation. So that bears the question again. It begs the question. How much can you diss it, as this first servant did? How much can you diss your forgiveness and still be saved? Well, I'll leave you with that. And we'll have just a little bit more to say next time, and then we'll move into Ephesians 4. But I hope you're seeing what is happening here in this text, that it's a parable about the gospel and how the gospel needs to inform how you treat others. How you've been treated should inform how you treat others. And I hope that you will take that to heart. And until next time, believe God.